Welcome to the 2009 Monkey My Back podcast review of the year.
Wasn't it? Welcome.
Hello.
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 Shall we quickly go around the table and say who's here today?
Yes.
Okay, hello, I'm James.
Hello, I'm Jane.
Hello, it's Nick again.
And Richard will be joining us from the past.
Ooh.
Later on, in a specially spliced in edited segment. And John can't be here because his mummy won't let him out today.
He'll be here in spirit, but not in body.
No, he won't. He's a massive shit out.
How was Jane supposed to say that first bit?
Exactly the same way she did it. It was beautiful.
No, you said a very specific way that she had to do her voice. What was it?
Once again with feeling.
No.
What? I can't even remember what you were talking about a minute ago. I have a very heavy cold. I've taken Sudafed, so I'm available for today.
For anyone listening to the podcast regularly from outside of the UK, it might seem like there's a particularly virulent cold going round the Monkey on My Back podcasting people, but actually that's just what living in the UK is like.
I've got a desperately unhealthy lifestyle that means I get a lot of colds.
I think most of us in the country do, don't we? Certainly I do, and everyone I know does.
Boring fact, you can have up to 8 colds a year and still be a healthy person.
Oh right, I at least have twice that many.
That isn't boring. That's
I have one cold a year, and that's it. Yeah.
So I thought you'd been bitten by a vampire on your neck.
No. Is it a love bite?
No.
I think it
might
be.
Has he got a love bite?
Looks like a love bite.
Have you got a love bite?
Jade's got a hickey.
No.
Okay. as this is not a visual medium, that probably won't mean anything to anyone, will it? Mm. Okay. New Year, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. What did everyone do? Did everyone do everything? Did anyone do resolutions?
I didn't do any resolutions. I sat and watched a lady on the TV, but I know somebody did do some resolutions. Jane?
Jane did resolutions. She didn't celebrate the New Year.
No, I didn't. Well, coming in. The whole New Year night, I don't really agree with. It's just a bit of an anticlimax and you pay a lot of money to go places.
Or you watch Mylene Klass fail to manage an audience.
She is made of fail, isn't she?
But she is pretty cute.
She's hot. She's lovely in a bikini.
She's not as cute as Rachel Stevens.
I disagree.
Really?
And disagree strongly.
Oh.
We'll be having good old-fashioned fisticuffs later.
Yes.
Jane, you made some resolutions. Let's hear them.
She really did as well.
Really
she didn't make these up.
Oh, and she's dated the page as
I
well.
Did
she's
the
really
page,
cute.
And drawn a little
heart
on it.
After New Year's resolution.
Yeah.
Or NYR, as I've abbreviated it to.
Okay, spit them out. Let's hear
them. Okay. The first one is to tweet more.
Yes.
Tweet more, good.
Yeah. Read more comics.
That's good.
I just want to point out this is in no order of importance. It's just how it went in my brain.
Oh, Jane, by the way, if you want to follow her on Twitter, is Jane MOMB?
Yeah.
Focus
more at work.
Yeah.
It's always a good one.
Hopefully no one from work is listening. Oh, actually, James
Hi.
Do housework every Sunday.
Yes, that's because you were the lady, and you should be doing the housework in the house all the time.
Specifically around Nick's and my house.
Yes.
Don't worry about everything.
Yeah, try not
even
to worry.
Even though I've made a list.
Even though you've made a list of things to worry about.
Don't get depressed.
No.
Yeah, that's a good one. Don't get depressed. Because otherwise you're like Arthur on EastEnders. He's where everyone goes back to when they're thinking about depression.
Yeah.
You're just rambling around your kitchen, throwing stuff on the floor. That isn't good. Don't do that.
No. That's horrible.
Save. She doesn't mean money, she means the children.
I mean everything. Save everything. And to make more friends, that's a new addition.
Oh. You do a podcast about comics.
Yeah.
That's got to be a perfect recipe for making friends.
You should sidelock the people in pubs and go, hey, I contribute to the premier laid-back Southampton-based comic podcast in the world.
That'll do it. I've made loads of friends since, well, I've met you two.
Yeah. It's not all good, is it?
No.
Okay, we should probably talk about your New Year, Nick.
What did I do? Oh, I watched a film called Black Dynamite, which I think came out last year, which was very good, with my friends Oki and Matt and my lovely partner Amy.
It sounds like a 1970s blaxploitation film. What is it?
It's a 2009 take on a 1970s blaxploitation film.
I'll lay on.
Yeah, so it's very, very good. There's lots of kung fu and what you're talking about. There's no what you're talking about. There's lots of can you dig it and. And yes. Stuff like that. It sounds a bit weird, me doing it, being a little Greek guy.
Can you dig to the Mock Turtles or anything, were they?
No. There's the people saying, hey, motherfucker, can you dig it? Can you dig it?
The early 90s indie standard.
Not the early. Poppy itself did a better song called Can You Dig It in the early 90s.
I like the Mock Turtles version.
Well, I like the Poppy. There's going to be fisticuffs on the musical front.
I think I know out of The Witcher the Two. Is more likely to pop up at the end of this particular podcast.
Oh,
okay. We should probably talk about the format of the show, because we're not doing a normal podcast today. It is the 2009 Review of the Year show, isn't it?
Yes.
So what are we going to do?
We're going to talk about the comics that came out that we liked. Not all of the comics that came out. This is by no means definitive.
No.
Please don't get too upset if we missed something that you read.
In fact, some of it won't necessarily have come out this year.
No,
that's true.
I think one of us in particular has probably got a comic that didn't come out this year. It's what's really influenced us this year, what's really stayed with us, what we've really enjoyed.
Mm.
And then at the end of it, we're all going to talk about, apart from John, who isn't here, we've recorded Richard's thoughts on his favourite books of the year, games, films,
and pretty much everything he wanted.
His favourite socks. His favourite weather pattern, his favourite cloud, that sort of thing. And then we're going to decide from our top picks of the year what the Monkey on My Back definitive book of the year is.
Yeah.
Yeah, which we haven't already done, I promise
probably
you.
Probably not going to be one of mine.
No, it's not one of mine. It's probably a fait accompli, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, hey-ho.
But we won't give it away until the very end.
Yeah, so keep listening. Okay. That was horrible, wasn't it?
No, it's good. I liked it. We should do more of that stuff.
Really?
We on the way over here. I sometimes my partner drives me over, and I force her for the 2 or 3 minute journey to listen to Radio 1, because normally she just listens to whatever CDs is in there. And most of the time, we don't even get to listen to a song. There's far too much.
Yeah.
There's just a guy or a lady just talking. In things like the keep listening and radio speak, like you were trying. And I think we should do it. I think we should do more of it.
Yeah, well, just rambling aimlessly.
Like they do on Radio 1.
Absolutely. Okay, so what was your favourite sock of the year?
My favourite sock of the year?
Favourite sock?
I think we already know how fond I am of the Day of the Week
day
socks
of week sock, yeah.
that my sister gave me.
Mm-hmm.
I quite like those. Yeah. Finally got to wear those all in sequence very recently, as I reported. But I did get a new bunch of socks that have stripes on them. I'm not wearing them today, but Jane noticed, I think, that I was wearing new socks last week. I'm quite fond of those. They are quite good.
And, Jane, what was your favourite berry of the year?
Favourite berry?
Your favourite berry of the year?
Strawberry?
Strawberry. That's very good.
They're just my favourite because they're sweet and tasty.
They are, they're succulent, aren't they? A quintessential British summer fruit.
They are. And they go with pretty much everything as well.
Do they?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Heroin?
Probably.
Not being a heroin
strawberry
addict.
Strawberry flavoured heroin.
I'm sure for heroin addicts that'd be quite nice. Would flavour make any difference? I don't know.
Only if you're injecting it into your mouth.
James? Favourite bodily function?
Probably the wee-wee.
The wee-wee was your favourite of the year?
The wee-wee, yeah.
That's normally my favourite.
Mm.
Does masturbating count as bodily function?
I think ejaculation's a bodily function.
That's probably my favourite.
Yeah.
No, because there's always that regret afterwards. No, actually, yeah, the wee-wee, definitely
the
wee-wee.
Yeah, I went for a bodily function that had minimal clean-up.
Depends where you're aiming it, really.
Even so, I never clean it up.
That just makes me. I was watched 40-year-old Virgin the other day. I don't know if any of you guys have seen that.
I have seen that.
The bit where he's in a toilet and he goes for a wee, and it doesn't go in the direction he thinks it's going to go in.
I don't remember that.
Isn't that a bit like Me, Myself and Irene, where he wakes up?
Yeah. Well, he's standing up, whereas in 40-year-old Virgin, he's sitting down. It's slightly different.
I can't remember the wee-wee bit, no, so I must have turned
that
out.
It wee's up instead of down.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. That's no good.
That's a...
Is he erect or something?
What's yes.
That? Oh, yes. I see.
It is very difficult urinating while aroused.
So, 2000.
I got a little bit too aroused on the tube yesterday as well.
Oh, fuck.
I don't know what that was all about. It was very awkward.
Was it the motion of the tube?
No, sometimes it just happens. Girls never really understand that, but sometimes it does just happen and nothing's really triggered it. You're not thinking sexy thoughts.
To be fair, Joan, I freaked you out the other day by admitting to you that sometimes the same thing happens to me on the back of the minibus.
Oh.
It takes us between the two locations at which we work, at work, and I admitted that towards the end there's some quite bouncy bits, and if I sit in the back of the minibus... Sometimes I have to make sure I've got a long coat on.
Hmm. It's not always about them, is it, James? It's basically what we're saying.
It's 80% the motion of the bus.
Yeah. Yesterday, one of my Christmas presents to my partner was taking her to see Avenue Q, which is very good. I recommend it. There's actually a song in it that's named after one of the very first things I heard Richard say, or that got there's a song called Everyone's a Bit Racist.
Oh, right, okay.
Which is something that Richard holds to very strongly.
It is, Everyone's a Bit Racist.
Yeah.
And that's his catchphrase, especially when drunk. Although he's not racist, to be fair.
He isn't, no. And I can't remember what my point was. It was something about being erect on the tube. I can't really remember. Never mind, it doesn't matter.
Just pretend you didn't say that.
The tube does excite me, though.
Does
I have
it?
To say.
Does it's it just the, freak you out?
No, it's the mixture of danger and boredom.
Danger and boredom.
Yeah, you're in a massive metal tube, hurtling through the earth very very fast. You don't really know whether you can trust the guy driving the thing, or any of the people running the thing, or any of the people on the platform who might jump in front at any moment. And at the same time, it's quite boring. So. Yeah, it excites me.
I don't like it either, but then we spoke about my particular fears about being underground.
Yes.
On the normal podcast last week.
Did we? Do you know? Yeah. I don't remember.
You should listen back. It's a great show. Podcast 15. I recommend it to anyone who's bored of life. Right, we should probably talk about the format of the show, what we're going to do. We've already done
it.
We tried to a minute ago. So we're going to talk about our favourite books and then come up with a winner. It was so long ago I'd completely forgotten. I've already told you about it, so you should probably crash straight in. First up is Jane.
Hello, Jane.
Probably it's a good year for you, in so much as probably I think last year 2009, the first year really you read comic books at all.
Yeah, apart from my brother's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comics when I was about 8 years old. I don't think they really count, though. But
no.
Yeah, it was the first year for me to get into comic books, courtesy of James.
Hi.
And my weekly trip to the Forbidden Planet.
That's
and
right, yeah.
Me standing there going, just pick me something.
And then I usually talk to you about the kind of things you like.
That's
and,
never going to get old.
No.
To be fair, well, previous to that, I had sort of flicked through The Stand, the first part of The Stand series, which our friend John was picking up, and quite liked that, the fact there was a book I read, as you all know, and I liked the artwork and things, but I still had a very stereotypical view of comic books. And the book that you recommend to me has been out for a while, so it's not new, but it's new. It was definitely very new to me, which was...
So should we do it for the first time this year as well.
Should we do a drum roll? This is your book of the year, is
my
it?
My book of the year is Why the Last Man.
It's a good book. It's a very good book.
Yes.
What happens in it? All the way, all the whole thing.
And all of the characters' names. Don't miss any of them out.
I haven't written all the characters' names down.
She's written notes, though.
Who's
Did
Beth?
You hear that?
Beth. There's two Beths.
Who's the first one?
Beth GF.
Yeah, who's that?
That's Yurik's girlfriend.
Who's Yurik?
Yurik Brown is the main character. He's
okay.
A man.
You're saying Yurik?
Yurik.
I always thought it was Yurik.
Yurik.
It is Yurik, yeah.
Sorry.
Who's Dr. Manhattan?
It's not Dr. Manhattan. It's Dr. Allison Mann.
Oh, Dr. Allison. Ah, that's clever. It's clever wordplay.
Allison Mann.
Yeah.
Dr. A. Mann.
Yeah, Dr. A. Mann.
Do you know it? I hadn't really ever thought of that.
Yeah, it's clever wordplay.
Do you want me to talk about...
Pretty much, yeah. I suppose we're talking about how clever one of the characters being called Dr. A. Mann is... but we haven't actually said what it's about.
You should probably talk about it, and I should shut up.
Okay.
I'm just going to drink my tea.
That's fine. Well, Why the Last Man? I picked up in trade, so I didn't pick up in floppy, so I've collected all 10 now and read them all. I don't think there's going to be any more after this.
No, that's it.
It's all self-contained.
It's about a sort of flu plague, undefined scientific plague
thing.
Bout of yuckiness.
Yeah, bout of yuckiness that kills off all the men in the world, apart from Yurik and his monkey Ampersand. All male, not just male humans, male animals as well are killed off. So
all of them, every last one of them just dies.
Apart from Yurik and Ampersand.
They die.
Ampersand is his monkey that he's training.
How do those two survive? Do you find out?
We do find out. I'll get to that.
Oh, sorry.
Has James read it? Is he being coy?
I don't think he has.
I've not read it.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, it's great.
Even though he recommended it to me later on, yeah, he hadn't actually read it.
It's got women in.
I was aware that there was a strong following for why you're...
Yeah.
Last Man amongst female readers. Wasn't being entirely sexist.
And it's about Yurik and Ampersand, and they're sort of, his girlfriend Beth is away in Australia when this occurs, and he can't get hold of her, and basically happens, the thing you do when you've had something so, you know, a catastrophe happen to you is that you go and find the people that you love.
Yeah.
So first thing he goes to find his mum, who's a state senator, and says, I'm going to go and find Beth. And it's all about his journey to try and find his girlfriend in Australia in a world that's just dominated by women. Mm. So, obviously, the stereotypical things of when something like this happens, there's lots of people looting, there are gangs. It's just the way that the women are coping without men and how their lives change and evolve to adapt to their new surroundings. And obviously, Yurik being the only man, he has to conceal his identity. Not very well. He is not good at it.
Most of the way through, he's not very good at it.
That's one thing that was really irritating about his character, is that he just revealed himself to pretty much anyone.
I think...
why the last flasher?
Yeah. No.
I think it's quite interesting. They do kind of explain why he's so crap at it through the course of it. Yeah, it's full of intrigue, though, isn't it? There's loads of other things.
There's lots of, within each, as I can tell, each episode... throughout the trade, there's smaller stories going through that you have to sort of find out. Mm. There's 355, who's part of the Culper Ring, is that right? And
it's like a secret service.
Yeah,
person,
secret service.
Basically.
And she's assigned to Yurik to look after him on his travels to find his girlfriend. But at the same time, there's Dr. Alison Mann, who they encounter, who wants to work with Yurik to find out why he's the last man.
Why the Last Man? There's loads of that stuff in it that you pick up as you go through it. There's loads of little jokes about it. Because what is it, something to the Y chromosome as well? And there's loads of the covers have, although you can't really see it on the trades, but loads of the covers have like a Y shape somewhere in the composition and stuff. It's quite clever.
It's very good. And it's all about his love, for the hit Beth, and how, you know, he was going to propose to her, and he really wants to go and find her, and all the things that happened along the way. It's really, the one thing I really liked about this, it was really easy to read, really easy to follow, and it gripped you. After I'd finished it, I was doing a trade, so after I finished a trade, I was sort of busting to go and buy the next one. Mm-hmm. So it just
it's addictive, it really is.
That sort of thing appealed to me, the how addictive it was, and it's sort of nurturing your need for the next one, and it didn't. None of them failed to sort of satisfy.
No,
as well.
One of the things that got me about it that you don't really start to notice until around the middle as well, though, is that none of the encounters in it that you think are just throwaway end up being. Nearly every plot thread ends up being resolved, which is a little bit, you know, it's written by Brian K. Vaughan, who worked on Lost for a while, and does a lot of really good comics actually, but it's not very realistic. Every plot kind of, there's lots of you'd think it'd feel like there was quite a lot of coincidence going on, but actually it works really well, and it's all like the storytelling's really quite tight, isn't it? The characters are really good as well. When bad things happen to them, you do really, really care about it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's one of the things that really surprised me, sort of broke me from the comic book stereotype, is how you got into the characters' lives as you would have a book or a TV series or a film. You sort of got into their personalities and their character. and you wanted to see how it's going to change, what was going to happen to them, and would he meet Beth? You know, 355's got a crush on Yurik, would that be satisfied? And Dr. Mann wants to repopulate the world with men again, and would that happen? It was just all the other stories that went through it. I think my favourite character, one of my favourite characters, was Hero, his sister, who
goes batshit insane.
Yes, she does. Yeah. But it was very sort of, it made me think of, well, what would happen if this did happen? You know, some people would be affected.
He explores everything, doesn't he? It's quite, there's a race of, well, not a race of women, there's a group of women who think it was a punishment on men or something. They become Amazons. They all cut off one breast and sort of go around basically being heavy duty bitches. And it's the one thing that that's interesting. Another thing that you don't really pick up on until a little bit later is that it isn't like the end of the world where like in a Mad Max sense or something where people are just out for everything they can. Yeah. You kind of, as the book goes through, you realise that the women are kind of realising that this is essentially the last generation of humans there can possibly be, because everything's, even once you solve the food problem and everything,
got to solve the repopulation. Yeah, there's
no
issue.
There's no reproduction going on and stuff. So Yurik becomes quite a commodity in that way. But the other thing, the reason I didn't read it for ages, it's the reason why it's quite good for someone who doesn't really read comics much is Pia Guerra, who, I don't know how her name's pronounced, Pia Guerra or whatever. Her art's really, really clean, isn't it? It's really easy to tell what's going on and which characters you're dealing with.
Yeah.
But the reason I didn't read it for ages was because I didn't really know the writer, and I thought it was going to be a little bit tiresomely, like, feminist.
A bit right on.
Yeah, but it's not at all. The fact that, I don't know, it's not anti-women, but it does kind of make the case that the assumption is that in a world without men, everything would run really swimmingly. But actually, they fuck it up just as badly as men would if they were left to their own devices. Don't they? It's quite, society devolves really, really quickly in it. There's my favourite character though, or one of my favourite storylines in it is it the Israeli or it's really ignorant of me, but where there are women in their army,
yes,
quite that's high ranking in their army, they kind of become this military force to be reckoned with. Because, like, traditionally everyone else, basically they lose their military, lose most of their police forces and everything. So it's quite crazy, isn't it?
It is. Cool. I think it has themes of how we live in a male-dominated society, as you can see, with the president obviously not being around anymore. And I think it's the Secretary of Agriculture, who's a woman,
ends up running
the country. So it just shows, it has those sort of themes in it as well. I think I really like Ampersand as well, the monkey.
The monkey's quite interesting, yeah.
Well, he is the key to everything in the end, isn't he? So it's his...
Don't say that.
I'm not going to.
He might not. You just did.
I'm not going to say why he's the key.
He might be the key to it. He's involved. He's the only other... Yeah, basically.
He's the key.
I'm interested now.
Exactly.
Because it's about a monkey.
A monkey. He's the key. Monkey. More clever wordplay. No?
It's one of my favourite Brad Pitt moments ever in 12 Monkeys, where he goes a bit insane about that.
Oh.
He says, monkey, man, never mind. I can't
I've never seen it. Look like Brad I've Pitt. Never seen 12 Monkeys, and I'm embarrassed.
It's a great film. It's really good.
Yeah,
anyway. It had a satisfying ending to it. And everything you wanted to happen maybe did or didn't happen. So
that's not unique, but it can happen that these very long, finite stories can actually at times, especially if they flog on to death a bit, and it does happen, let's be honest, sometimes these long-running stories are flogged to death a bit, stretch them out a little bit, which can make the ending a bit of an anticlimax, a disappointment. Yeah. So that's significant.
I think the interesting thing about it is, because it's another finite series from Vertigo, like Preacher and like Sandman, like a few other things they've done. But Why the Last Man doesn't, both Preacher and Sandman kind of falter in the penultimate couple of stories. They pick it up again at the end, and the end, both endings are satisfying to both of them. But there is that point where they kind of lose their way a little bit. Whereas Why the Last Man doesn't really do that. No. It's like he really plotted it out. Yeah. He knew exactly... It feels like he knew exactly what he wanted to do the whole way through it. So it's cool. It is cool.
Yeah, it made a really strong story. It made it really enjoyable. So that was my book of the year.
Cool. What, any other highlights from the year?
A couple.
That you've written down?
I'm enjoying The Stand.
Yes.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And Nola as well, which is one of the few comics I picked up myself.
Nova or Nola?
Nola.
Nola?
Yeah.
Have you spoken about it?
Yeah, twice.
Yeah.
Twice?
Yeah.
Shit.
It's about the Nola who's in New Orleans after the hurricane.
Oh, yeah. No, of course. Yeah,
And Madame Xanadu, which I've been really enjoying as well. So a few other things I've sort of picked up and then haven't really got into or left or couldn't find a second edition, so... I think it's one of the things for 2010 is maybe not get so hung up in finding the first issue.
Yeah.
As in realising that stories might have a background too, but if you pick up in a new series within that story, it's like with Madame Xanadu, it's not too hard to get into it. Yeah, and still enjoy it and not sort of think, what on earth's going on? So,
if they're doing their job right, you should be able to work out what's going on anyway.
Yeah.
Marvel are particularly good for putting recaps inside their books now, which I don't think DC do that much.
No.
So, but yeah, I mean, it's next year it's going to be a lot more difficult for you to pick something, probably, isn't it?
It is,
because you'll have been reading for a while.
I don't know, it's going to be, I'm looking forward to Last Resort, how that's going to pan out, because I think it's going to...
You're enjoying the just horror of that, weren't you? The sheer disgusting horror.
Is that my guilty pleasure. The second issue ever comes out?
If it does, yeah, because obviously, as Richard pointed out to me, it's the second time it was released in 1 year, the first edition.
Well, apparently the second edition is scheduled to come out the same day that Captain America White number one comes out, so good luck with that.
And looking forward to the Madame Xanadu continuation. As I'm still getting into this, there's still sort of looking ahead of what's going to happen for next year. And in the back of the issue 18 of Madame Xanadu, which I picked up, there was a new 8-part comic series called Jay the Barbarian, by Grant Morrison and Sean Murphy, which looks set, from what I've, the vibe on the internet, on the interweb, is that it's going to be sort of quite a good 8-issue series. So... And there's a sneak preview in the back of issue 18 of Madame Xanadu. So that's probably my only hot tip for 2010.
Yeah, I think the likelihood of us not talking about that in the coming weeks and months on the podcast is slim to none.
Grant Morrison book, isn't it? That's probably going to come up.
It looks suitably dark, doesn't it?
Yeah. And obviously in trade is 45. Well, more of a... It's not a trade, is it, really?
Well, it's a one-off, but it is a trade. Yeah, it's a... Well, no, it's a graphic... Novel-ish. Mm. Yeah,
I think that'd be my hot pick for 2010. Well,
I think that's going to be a good one, yeah, absolutely.
We're excited. They were nice guys.
They were exceptionally nice guys.
And it sounds like it's quite interesting, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, absolutely. Anything else? TV? Sounds like? Sounds two like... syllables.
One thing I enjoyed of 2009 was The Inbetweeners, which... It's a really odd series because more girls like it than boys.
It shouldn't work at all, should it? It's just crass and horrible, and I love it.
It's the show with the clunge.
How a show where a guy refers to lady, sexy lady things as clunge would appeal to girls.
I'm going to swear because I have to say it. Bus wankers.
Funniest
thing ever.
I don't know.
How you don't want to shout bus wankers out of people.
Shout what, sorry?
Bus wankers.
What?
Wankers doesn't count as swearing anyway. There was a guy in the credits on Buffy called Thomas Wanker. It's a name. So it's alright.
I bet it's pronounced Vanker.
It's just, it's very funny that they come up with it in one of the episodes and then something happens later on in the episode to do a bunk bus wankers, which, gets
she can't stop herself.
She said it.
Brilliant. I just and series 3 is coming out next year. This year.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to that.
We picked that up on the second series, and we were quite surprised by how we. That sounds a bit weird, doesn't it?
My partner and I
were quite surprised because it just does look like it's going to be tat, but it's quite funny.
It is funny, but I just don't know that many boys that really enjoy it. More girls enjoy
it. It's because the guys end up being made arseholes every single episode.
I know Richard's a big fan, Nick's a big fan. Mm-hmm. I like the couple of episodes I've seen. So.
I think they're it's very funny.
You just mix the wrong sort of boys.
Maybe.
What films are out this year that you like? Did you like any films?
The Watchmen I really enjoyed. Is that how this year? Yeah, April yeah, came out, wasn't it? And I think Inglourious Basterds as well.
I saw that again the other day for the first time.
It's like good.
I saw it on Blu-ray.
Oh, did you? Have you got a Blu-ray player?
I have, yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
It had a different tone to his other films, I felt.
It's very silly.
Yes.
And there were a couple of times where he pissed me off, but...
But it's sort of very film noir adaptation, well, which I thought was quite
good. It's the bit where Samuel Jackson explains something to you in voiceover. I can't remember what he explains.
Oh, is there a Samuel L. Jackson voice? Do you know? Yeah. I can't remember.
Really annoys me where he's got some really good tension going, then he breaks it by explaining something, and I can't remember what, and it really annoyed me. He's a bit like ITV News. When they tell you a story, they tell you about the story again slightly more simply, and then they summarise the story.
Annoying. Yeah.
Brad Pitt was extremely good in it. I've never had a Brad Pitt crush.
I kind of have.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with me, I think he's a brilliant actor.
I think it's more about him being a really very good actor.
Yes,
yeah. Really. He's tainted now, isn't he?
Angelina.
That Jolie woman.
My favourite, actually, I really liked him in Burn After Reading. Was that this year?
Yeah, no, that was last year.
Oh, bollocks. Nearly all of the films I liked turned out to be last year. I watched films really
When we say last year, do we mean 2008?
Sorry, last.
Oh, don't you hate the first few days of a new year?
It takes me about a month.
Yeah.
But we actually watched both Kill Bill. I might have mentioned it last week.
We watched both Kill Bill things.
But actually, I think that Reservoir Dogs and Kill Bill are the two best, sort of tightest individual stories that Quentin Tarantino has made himself. Everything else, and I think Inglourious Basterds is like this, and Pulp Fiction certainly is, have loads of really, really good scenes in them, but don't really feel like one film. They feel like a bunch of really, really good scenes that end up vaguely telling a story.
I don't agree. I think Pulp Fiction's an absolute masterwork. And
I think it's a great film.
I don't think it's a tight story. I think it's a masterpiece in non-linear storytelling. I think it's so good, Grant Morrison could have almost written that.
I do like Pulp Fiction. I wasn't complaining. I just think
I prefer it to Kill Bill, guys.
I've seen Planet Terror and Death Proof. The Grindhouse double.
No,
feature.
I haven't seen those.
Okay.
But they looked interesting. Violent, horrible sort of.
They are good. Not the best, but they're good watches.
Are they better than Jackie Brown?
I like Jackie Brown.
I quite like Jackie Brown. My favourite is still True Romance, and he didn't even direct.
No.
Like Jackie Brown when you absolutely positively have to bore everyone in the room.
Yeah, that's the one.
Reservoir Dogs has got to be my favourite. I think Reservoir Dogs is my favourite.
I really kind of love Tim Roth. And watching Lie to Me over the last year has made me love him even. I've actually got quite a strong crush on him. He's a complete bastard, but he's watching Reservoir Dogs back and seeing his performance in that, he is very good.
I think Reservoir Dogs, for everyone of a probably who was a teen in the early 90s, it's got a really special place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember having a massive Select magazine poster of the Reservoir Dogs in my room when I was a kid.
Do you like Tim Roth in The Hulk?
I thought he was really funny in The Hulk. I'm not sure what the point of casting him in that was. I really liked it, though. I really like that film.
I've just had a realisation, though, that we're doing a review of last year.
Sorry, yeah.
And the last several years.
We're reviewing 20-year-old movies.
Let's move away from that.
But we probably should. We should probably move on to Richard.
So they were my highlights for 2009.
Thank you, Jane. I think what we do now is we throw over to me in the past...
And Richard in the past.
Talking about the past. Which is weird.
Talking. What is that even from? Where if
it's Adam and Joe.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Talking.
Over to me.
I love those guys. Oh, sorry. Over to you, James.
Okay, right, this is James. And hello, you're joining us from the past.
Hello there.
And that's Richard.
Hello.
Who's not here today, but he's here today.
Mm.
So we're going to talk about your favourite book of the year, and then maybe any other highlights you had of the year. So what, Richard, what was your book of the year?
It was between three books. Unknown Soldier, which I've been enjoying very much.
Which we've reviewed on the website. John did a classic trade review back in June, was it?
Yeah, a long time ago. We tried to give one away, didn't we?
Yes, on one of these podcasts, and no one got in contact with us.
So, still waiting for someone to own up. And
yeah, go to iTunes, and it's on episode one, was it?
It was episode one, so if you can make it through episode one, good luck to you.
And you might have a copy of Unknown Soldier, which is very good. My other choice was Lock and Key. The first five issues were out last year, the second five issues came out this year, and I think it's on about the second issue now of the third series. Really good, Joe Hill. Kind of, how would you describe it, a horror comic?
It's a sort of suspense thriller, isn't it? It's the only comic book that's ever actually made me jump while I was reading it, so that was good. Made me all nervous. I was reading it in the bedroom, made me all nervous, and the door was behind me. I kept looking behind me to see if the thing that made me jump was there, but it wasn't.
It's good. I mean, that is a testament to that comic. I lent it out to Dean, who does the Twitter comic. He's not a comic book fan, and he loved it. He really, really enjoyed it. Yeah. He likes Stephen King novels, so that was the hook in. And he wants to read more, so I think that's a good example of how good it is that, you know, not just comic fans will enjoy it. I think people that... out of kind of comics would probably enjoy it as well.
It's an excellent book. I'd recommend anyone to read it.
But my choice, my number one choice, hands down above those two, was Chew.
Gotcha.
Which got quite a lot of buzz when it came out. The first issue sold out very quickly, and I think it's still going for about £40 on eBay.
Yeah, didn't they go to like four reprints of the first issue or something ridiculous like that?
And the second issue went to reprint. I think the third and fourth did as well. So a huge amount of hype surrounding it. I bought it by accident, really. I was kind of saw it as the last one left on the shelf, and I liked the cover. Grabbed it, and then I didn't really know what to make of it after I read it. I don't know about you. I was kind of, wow, that's very different. And then I read it again, and I thought, this is a great comic. And we probably should explain what it's about if you haven't heard about it. Most people have.
If you haven't heard about it, I'd like you to send a picture of the rock you've been living under to us. You can send that to monkeyonmyback@gmx.com and entitle the email, "Here's a picture of my rock."
Do that.
Yeah.
Okay. So Chew is written by John Layman and Rob Gillory. Did we agree it was? Or Gillory
or something, yeah.
Now, John Layman, I had heard of before. I think he was an editor at Wildstorm. So he's got lots of experience kind of editing other people's work. But this, he writes and edits himself. He also does the lettering. And Rob actually draws and colours it himself. So it's just the two of them that produce it each and every month. And the story's about Tony Chu. And he's a cibopathic. I think that's how you pronounce it.
I think so.
So what it means is... he can take a bite of an orange and get a feeling in his head about which tree it grew from, what pesticides were used, and where and when it was harvested.
Mm-hmm.
What it also means, if he eats a piece of bacon, he gets a vision of something completely different. So he sees the pig being slaughtered.
That's funny, when I eat your bacon sandwich, I get a vision of heaven.
Me too, especially for brown sauce.
Brown sauce.
So that was the kind of premise, really, from the first issue was Tony. It's set in a world where... chicken is outlawed because of a bird flu outbreak, so it's actually illegal to buy and eat chicken, which is a kind of a nice twist. So that was pretty much the first issue. They went and there was kind of like a speakeasy selling chicken illegally.
That's right, yeah.
And then they found out that the person, when he ate a bit of the chicken, he found out that the person, the chef that was cooking the food, was actually a murderer. Because he cut himself, the chef, didn't he? And a bit
That's
of his
it.
Blood got in, if yeah. I remember rightly. So as a result, because of his good work, he gets... he's a police officer, but then he gets employed by the FDA, the Food... Is it Food Standards Agency? That's the British one, isn't
that's
it?
That's the FSA.
That's the FSA, yeah. So the American equivalent, and he is responsible for hunting down people that are selling chicken illegally.
Because they've become the most powerful law enforcement agency in the country, haven't they, as a result of this illegality of chicken.
So what kind of happened from there? I mean, I was a little bit cautious at first, because as good as the first issue was, I started to think, well, how far can they go with this?
Yeah.
I thought, is it going to be a bit of a one-trick pony, and it's just going to be Tony eating people and random foods, and that'll be it? But as the stories progress, they've introduced this whole kind of universe, really, with different characters... very unique characters in a very unique kind of world, really. the first five issues was Taster's Choice, and I absolutely loved it. Great story, great characters, as I say, a great universe. The art is particularly unique. I mean, it's got an indie feel to it, which I think might put people off, because it is very kind of cartoony, but it's really over-exaggerated, and that really helps with the story they're trying to tell, because it is a larger-than-life universe. And yeah. I think with the characters, Rob's done that justice, because it is just a very silly, fun comic that entertains each and every month. So this is my pick, purely based on the fact that I think it's been certainly the most fun comic I've read this year, and certainly the most different comic I've read in a long, long time. But mostly as well, hats off to the two creators, because they're doing this themselves, and you can sense the amount of fun they're having with it. And I think they've come out and actually said how surprised they are by the success of it all.
Well, that's what's nice about Image. I mean, my top pick is an Image book as well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of my favourite books I've read this year, I've gone through my picks, and my favourite non-Big Two book of the year, other than the one that I chose as my top book of the year, all told, was Olympus, and that was on Image as well. Mm. I guess a bad press from some of our friends. Mm. John, I'm looking at you. And I'm not really sure why, because some of the best books this year have been out on the Image title, haven't they? And I think that's it. It's creator-owned. It's usually a labour of love, isn't it? Mm. So I think Viking as well probably deserves an honourable mention from that particular stable. So it's clearly been one of the top books of the year. It's had a shitload of heat around it. I mean, why do you think it stands out from everything else that's come out this year as being so exceptional?
I think if you look at comics and you go to your comic shop, most of the books on the shelves have been there a long time. You know, they're the Supermans, Batmans, Daredevil, they've been around for a long, long time. And although writers and artists can do great things with those comics, it's very rare for a comic to hit the shelves that's creating a whole new universe. And, you know, that's happening with Chew, and they're doing it very well. So I think that's one of the main things, is people are recognising that it's good to have new comics hitting the bookstores, and it's good that people are getting into them, because there's lots of good creators out there, and it's healthy if comic fans like ourselves, rather than just keep buying from the big two, you know, we do go out and we do support these other comics. So I think that's why it's been getting a lot of heat, is because people do want something different. They want to experience a different universe, and they want to see people do something different, and they're certainly doing that with Cheer.
It is a very rich and well-developed world that the characters live in. He's clearly thought about it for a long time. I think the artist was attached to a Tony Lee project before he moved on to Cheer. Yeah, I was reading on Tony Lee's website before Christmas. I think he was working on something Tony Lee had been writing.
I mean, he's doing a great job on the art. I mean, you think that he draws and colours, which is quite rare. And I think they're going to be putting them out monthly, probably every 5 weeks, I think they're looking at. So they're going to try and do about 11 a year. They said that they reckon he's got about between sort of 50 and 60 issues.
Sure.
So we're still to learn, you know, how did Tony Chu get his abilities? They've thrown in so many characters so quickly. I mean, you remember the first five issues.
Yeah.
They introduced all these different characters and places, but they've not really explored it that much. So I suspect we're going to be introduced to more characters, and then when we get into kind of maybe issue 20 and so on, hopefully we'll start learning a little bit more about how he came to be and how he got his powers and things. So my going back to what I said earlier, my original concerns about there being a bit of a one-trick pony, I don't think it's going to be. I think they're just going to keep pushing this world, and I'm really looking forward to seeing where it's going. Cool. So highly, highly recommend it. Great read, a lot of fun. It has been a good year for comics. It's been a good year for trades as well. I mean, things like Parker as well were very good, which was kind of a straight-to-trade book. Lots and lots of other things to pick, but for just pure enjoyment, Chew is my pick of the year.
I'm not at all surprised, actually, because it's just talking to you, it's been the book when it comes out. It's the one that you mention most often.
Mm.
Any other highlights of 2009?
Film-wise, I thought it started quite well. Slumdog Millionaire, great film. Been to India quite a few times. Really love the culture, and they completely nailed it with Slumdog Millionaire. Great film. Hard to believe that was released in January, I think, or Christmas last year.
I think it was definitely 2009.
Yeah, so That was a great film, deserved a lot of credit. Really enjoyed Star Trek. I'm not a Trekkie at all. Couldn't give a shit about Star Trek. But I really enjoyed it. I thought that was a lot of fun. Coraline, which I took my nephew to. Me and the missus, we took my nephew. I think we enjoyed it more than him.
I got it for Christmas in 3D on Blu-ray. It's lovely, brilliant. Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it's great. Great, great film. Really enjoyed it. Enjoyed Up. I thought that was a great Pixar film as well. Really good. Pixar does do it every year. I don't know how they manage to do it, but I've never been disappointed with a Pixar film. But then there was Avatar, which I know you've spoken about before.
Uh-huh.
Not the greatest, most original of stories, but for the 3D, absolutely mind-blowing. And I was reading yesterday more talk about 3D and this being the year of 3D.
Uh-huh.
Looking at making TVs, 3D TVs coming out. Sky are talking about showing football highlights in 3D as well.
So they were experimenting with it last year, weren't they?
They were, yeah. So watch Sky Sports, watch the football in 3D, which I'm not too... don't know what to make of that.
Yeah.
But that's... I think Avatar's deserves credit for the turning point it's gonna have on cinema. I mean, we said when we left, it's a reason to go back to cinema.
Oh yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. Any other films you like? Anything by Zack Snyder that came out this year that you particularly enjoyed?
I forgot about The Watchmen. The best thing about Watchmen was seeing it in IMAX. Never been to IMAX before.
Yeah. We went to the Greenwich IMAX together, didn't we? It was a very nice date.
It was good. Makes me want to go back. Wish there was more IMAX cinemas around.
Absolutely.
Love to see Avatar in the IMAX. Watchmen I thought was all right. I think you said in your review of it on the website, is that it should never really have been made into a film, but they did, so just get on and watch it. And it was entertaining.
I think they made the best film they could have.
Yeah.
From it.
Yeah.
What you will.
Certainly not my pick. So video game wise, FIFA, as you know, you're a big fan of FIFA football.
Yeah, like
so
FIFA.
Main reason, because our football team has not been very good of late, although it's getting better. It's a good opportunity to just kind of live your dreams and get Saints
Future's
winning.
Bright, mate. It's
good now, but nothing beats kind of winning the Premiership on FIFA, so that's been quite enjoyable.
That's true.
But Call of Duty, without a doubt, Modern Warfare 2, absolutely brilliant, loads of fun.
Only online though.
Yeah, I thought the game was a bit short. I played it on hardened, which was worthwhile. I think if you put it on an easier setting, you just sail through it too quickly. Which I know you think you did, James.
I wouldn't want to be drawn.
But a great game.
Yes, I did!
All in all, I think 2009 for geek culture was a pretty good year.
What a bad year, was it? And we started a blog.
And we started a blog, which should be the 19th of January, I think.
19th of January, we've been doing it for 1 year. So thank you to anyone who's read it. And thank you very much for giving us your thoughts, Richard. That's very kind
of you.
You're
very welcome.
What is it you're doing today that you can't talk about?
Today, I've got family stuff to do. Taking the Christmas decorations down in the morning. Boo. And then family in the afternoon.
That sounds far too real. I think we'll have to try and come up with something more fantastic.
Okay. So I'll now pass you back to Nick. Hello, Nick.
Hello, Nick. And me.
Thanks for that, past James and past Richard. You're awesome. And we don't want you to change at all, although you kind of already have. Some more of your skin's fallen off and formed dust since you recorded all that. And
lost a few hairs and
lost
eyelashes.
Lost a few hairs, possibly, and eyelashes.
Know, actually, that was a very interesting thing I saw on QI the other day, whether it's drawn. They reckon that on a cellular level, you regenerate every 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. So
I didn't know that.
So you're essentially a completely different person from who you were 10 years ago.
That really freaks me out, man.
Yeah, me too, actually. Yeah. I think that must have been a repeat, because I think I remember seeing that and freaking out about it about 6 months ago.
Yeah. I feel really uncomfortable now.
Well, you're feeling a bit shivery.
Yeah.
But
might be where I'm sat next to Jane, though.
Is that because you don't feel like yourself 10 years ago now?
I don't know. But that was very interesting. I enjoyed Richard's pick about Chew.
He loved that.
He did love Chew.
He loves that a lot.
Yeah, very popular book as well. He's not on his own.
No.
I think we mentioned in that piece, it's the amount of reprints the first issue went to is ridiculous.
It is. Is it? Because I was waiting to pick it up in trades. I read the first couple and missed a couple. So I'm waiting to pick it up in trades. Is it living up to its potential, do you think?
I like it, but I think I've said on our blog, I like it, but I can't put my finger on why I like it. Mm. And I think I said in that piece with Richard, I think it's a well-realised universe. I think it feels very lived in. I think it feels very different from anything else at the moment. But I just can't put my finger on why I like it. And I think the point Richard made, time will probably tell as to whether it's enjoyable or whether it's a great series.
Yeah. Mm.
I think it will remain an enjoyable series. Yeah. I'm yet to be convinced it's going to be great and will live in the memory for a very, very long time.
Sounds like you've got to have quite a morbid curiosity as well to read it.
Maybe. It's not. I think the cyberpath or cyberpath powers treated with a very light hand. The violence in it's very cartoony.
More sort of what he has to do to find out who's
done with quite a light touch, isn't it? It's
The thing I remember from the first couple of issues is he makes that leap remarkably quickly.
Yeah.
He wants to find out something so bad that actually eating a bit of a person doesn't seem to faze him at all, really. So it's as if he was eating something a little bit disgusting rather than it doesn't really deal with the morality or anything like that of being a cannibal.
Good pick on his part, though. Yeah. I mean, it's much loved by many people.
It's very pretty, it's cute looking.
If you've got a first edition issue one, I'd probably sell it now, to be honest.
I haven't. I've got like two or three.
I'm not sure. Yeah, mine was the fourth print, I think. I'm not sure it's going to hold its value. I don't know. I'm being a bit negative about it for no apparent reason.
No, I mean, it's difficult because it's very different.
It is.
And it's unusual that books that different get such a lot of attention. And so it's possible that all you're really feeling is there was that bright, shining moment of thinking, this is the most awesome fucking thing. Yeah. I've never seen anything like this before. Yeah. And then what you've actually got is just a very good comic or quite a good comic.
It's beautifully written, beautifully drawn. I think I'm just... my tastes are maybe a little bit darker than the very light-hearted world of Chew.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Chew.
Chew.
Chew. So, for your tastes, what was your book of the year?
Well, there were several. I'll talk about my main one in a minute, but I think I just wanted to go through what my highlights of the year for me were personally. I haven't prepared these at all.
Wow, there's a lot of writing on that.
Absolutely. From DC, I suspect you're going to talk about this in a moment, so I won't go on too much about it, but Detective Comics, and more specifically the Greg Rucka, Batwoman. Run has just been phenomenal. I think probably in terms of ongoing superhero stories, probably been the book of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel, this was a bit of a toss-up between Remender's Punisher run, which has been an absolute breath of fresh air, really good fun, really funny, but also Dark Avengers.
I've really liked the ones I've picked up of that.
It's been a little bit hit and miss, but actually it's been quite funny, and it's also been enjoyable seeing Osborne's descent back into madness, which is essentially what Dark Avengers is chronicling. It's been knocked a little bit, but I think
it's good. I think it's all of those comics are doing something different from what you're traditionally supposed to do. In the Marvel Universe, or even in the DC Universe.
Yeah, it's really screwed about with the status quo. It's been good fun. Yeah. From a non-Big Two publisher, other than the book I'm going to talk about as my absolute pick of the year, I really enjoyed Olympus from Image.
Oh yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah, that was a four-parter, came out in the middle of the year, and it was by Nathan Edmondson and Christian Ward. The story was relatively straightforward. Two brothers who worked essentially for the ancient Greek gods had a mission, but it was just so visually stunning. Very chaotic art. Each issue had its own sort of colour palette of very bright, vivid primary colours. It was a real sort of standout book. Just as much for how it looked, for the story as well. And I'm not normally that influenced by... I like good art, but just Olympus blew me away. It's a great series. Well worth picking up in trade. if only to look at. But the story is great as well.
You talked about that bit on the website, didn't you? You could probably do it.
For a four-part series, I actually reviewed three of the four books. I liked it so much, I just felt the need to blog about it each time I got a copy in my hand. So that was excellent. In others, sort of strange vague category I came up, was probably The Rainbow Orchid was my favourite book I picked up this year. By Gary Ewan, I think it was, we've alluded to before, I have a great love of the European-style comic book.
Yeah.
And it's lovely to see that heritage of just good quality storytelling. You know, it's not violent, it's not controversial, it's quite charming, it's quite whimsical. But, excuse me.
Oh, goodness, you're right.
No, I just had a complete emotional breakdown talking about The Rainbow Orchid. It's all right, that wasn't my cold at all. It's just beautiful. As I think I've said before, clearly a labour of love by Gary Ewing. Just an absolute charming story, as I say, that follows on in a sort of the footsteps of some of my favourite books. It is very, very Tintin-like. Mm. But I'm just so happy that one of the people at the forefront of the what seems to be a new wave of European comic books is a British guy, and I'm quite proud of that. That you know, one of our own is holding on to that heritage.
That is a gorgeous book.
It's a beautiful really edition. Nice. They all are though. There's just something special about holding this larger format book. It feels more substantial. Excuse me, I'm not sure I'm going to make this through in one piece.
My goodness.
And that's probably my film highlight of the year. Was probably between Star Trek and Watchmen, to be honest with you, because I'm a...
So those are the two that Richard really picked out with some prompting on.
Yeah, I like a big blockbuster.
Hmm. They were good. Watchmen was fun. Star Trek was great fun.
Uh-huh.
Like, my... Amy, my partner,
yeah,
who I keep referring to, because she is my life. It doesn't like Star Trek at all, and she really enjoyed it, which I think maybe Richard said.
It was very accessible. I thought it's a superb rebooting of the franchise, so kind of making it can stand up and be the 11th film. It very much stands up on its own two feet, I think, as a movie, which is great. Those were my general sort of picks of the year.
Those are your highlights?
Those are my highlights.
Your comic and genre highlights?
My comic, exactly right.
You didn't meet anyone who has been quite influential in your life or anything like that?
No.
We met Dave Gibbons.
Oh, fine.
That was nice.
No one with curly hair and glasses and a beard. Called Nick.
What, Santa?
Yeah.
We met Nick this year, which is very nice. You get mentioned in the review of the year we've done on the blog.
Yeah. I might have to read the blog.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't if I was you. You like well-written things, don't you?
Well, I don't.
Just read John's stuff.
I'm not fussy.
Richard writes it. You both write.
Richard is very good as well, but Richard and I are both quite self-effacing about our writing.
Oh, you're both very good. There you go. It's recorded.
And that's the sound of Jane blowing smoke up someone's arse.
No, a bit of validation's always nice.
Yeah. It is always nice,
I think.
However, my pick of the year is...
drum roll?
You can do a drum roll.
That's everyone's eardrums, brain, blown.
Back to Brooklyn, which is a five-part limited series from Image that concluded in June of this year, written by Garth Ennis with story by Jimmy Palmiotti, and art by Mihailo Vukelic, I think. I'm really sorry if I pronounced that name wrong. Back to Brooklyn, essentially, is the story of Bob Saetta, who's the second in command in the Saetta crime family in Brooklyn. He presents himself to a police station one Friday morning, basically offering to shop the entire crime organisation.
Blimey.
Two cops, Agent Erskine, and Deputy Commissioner Hardy, both very excited about this. Unfortunately, news gets back to Bob that his brother Paul, who's head of the crime family, have taken his wife and his son hostage, and Bob convinces the two police agents to let him out rescue his kids, and then he'll come back and he'll blow the whole thing wide open. And so that it starts with Bob going back to Brooklyn, basically has to fight his way through the various members of the crime family, along with two friends that he meets along the way, an old flame called Maggie Mahoney and a guy called Vinny T. Mm-hmm. He's called Vinny T because it's Vinny the Thermos, because he's got a really big dick. And we see him being beaten on various occasions because he's basically slept with virtually every gangster's wife in Brooklyn, which makes him deeply unpopular with them. It seems on the surface quite brutal, because it's Garth Ennis and it is brutal and it is violent, and there's a lot of swearing and a lot of unpleasantness. But it seems like a pretty standard crime thriller, until I think we get to the third issue and we find out a little bit more about why he wants to blow the lid on the crime family. And it's more to protect. He'd rather shop the family and have everyone know them as a crime syndicate, rather than have his brother Paul's shameful secret revealed.
Right. Ah, that's interesting. So a bit of intrigue. Is the awkward. That was a chaffinch just came into the room.
It flew out of my nose.
And does it deal with the fact that the main character is presumably also a gangster, morality wise?
Absolutely.
He's not completely clean, is he?
No one is. No, I mean, apart from excuse me.
More sneezes. Oh, that was, you couldn't hardly even hear that.
No, that was quite good.
The thing is,
my sneezes are such force that make my ribs hurt, which is
that's a nasty one when that happens.
The only one that really who's clean, morally speaking, is Maggie, and I think she's there to be our voice, like the reader's voice in the middle of this. No one else in this story is entirely unblemished. They've all done awful things. And obviously Maggie, she's the device to keep saying, you know, you've dragged me into this horrible world. Once she finds out Paul's terrible secret, she becomes happier to be part of Bob's revenge. I don't really want to talk about it. I talked about it a little bit on the blog, spoiling what the first reveal was.
Yeah.
There's a second one in the final, the final issue as well, which... The original twist, finding out what Paul's dirty little secret was horrible, although alluded to early on in the story. When you find out the final twist, it's gut-wrenching. And it's one of the most downbeat endings to any story I've ever read. I mean, no one comes out of it looking particularly good. In fact, very few people come out of it full stop.
Oh, right, that's Garth Ennis.
Yeah, that's the sort of conclusion to the story you would expect. It's just the story, and the reason I've picked it is the story stayed with me all year. When I think back, you know, when people say, oh, what's the best thing you've read this year? It's the first thing that comes into my mind, but just because the effect the final issue had on me, it was really powerful stuff. And Ennis is often written off, I think, by certain people of being violent for the sake of being violent.
Yeah, I was
violent.
About to say, he's always going to be remembered for things like The Boys and stuff. That's more about the audience that those books find, though.
Yeah.
I think. When he wants to, I don't know if this is what you're about to say, but when he wants to examine interesting morality, morality plays with characters that you wouldn't necessarily... I mean, Hitman. Although Hitman had lots of cartoon violence in, there was some really heavy and heartfelt stuff in there. He did one of the hands-down best Superman comics ever during Hitman and stuff like that. So it's sort of...
And that's exactly...
Yeah, I can imagine, from what you're saying, I can imagine...
That's exactly what Back to Brooklyn does, is obviously, you know, you have here a character with highly questionable morals, yet... You know, what's worse, you know, the way he lives his life or the way he's going about trying to put right this wrong that his brother's perpetrated, you know, and it's, you know...
I love that sort of story.
Yeah, it's very, very challenging. It's not an easy read by any stretch of the imagination. It's gut-wrenching, it's heartbreaking, it is sick at times, exceptionally violent. The art, too, is very odd, but very... suits the story. It's very muted. very washed out
on the
tones.
Shelf, and it's quite washed. Yeah, it's lots of washes and stuff.
It's like the world they live in. It's quite grubby.
Yeah,
But it's just by far and away the standout book of the year for me. It's got so little press that I can make out. It hasn't even got a Wikipedia page, which is quite unusual.
It's unusual. I wonder if
we ought to write one.
Hmm?
We ought to write one.
I wonder if they didn't maybe expect just having Garth Ennis's name attached to it would generate enough, because the thing with those sorts of creator-owned books at Image, I think we've talked about it before, and I'm still not entirely sure if I'm right, but I think a lot of the publicity and stuff falls to the creators to do.
Yeah.
So a lot of the smaller creators who are quite active online can really push their books.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear much about Best Brooklyn. I maybe heard Jimmy Palmiotti mention it.
It's very... It's weird, because obviously Ennis scripts, but it seems to be from a story from Palmiotti, because he does a piece about his experiences of Brooklyn in the back of each issue, which is very interesting as well. So obviously part of the world that's very close to his heart. But
it's interesting seeing what Jimmy Palmiotti does, because he and Joe Quesada kind of started out together, I think, probably like working on each other's art quite a lot as well. And when Joe Quesada became like quite a high up guy over at Marvel, Jimmy Palmiotti sort of started working on his own quite a lot more.
Sure.
You start to see stuff that he's written coming through and stuff, so it's quite interesting. It's always interesting seeing what he does, and a lot of it's New York centric. Yeah. I think
I guess they say right about what you know, don't they? And he obviously knows, certainly when it comes to Brooklyn, he knows it very well. It's out in trade now. Certainly if you haven't read it, it's something I'd recommend picking up. It's but make sure you're an adult,
I think. I'm not sure then. I was going to ask if I could borrow it, but learn how to make sure I'm an adult.
Take the adult test.
Oh, there's an adult test.
Yes, Jane's warming her hands up as we speak.
That sort of adult test.
Have you ever seen a film called Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead?
No.
Oh, because that's kind of it's a story about people who've moved on from being mobsters but end up having to take on one last job, and it all goes a bit pear-shaped. It's one of my favourite films, actually.
Yeah.
And it sounds kind of similar.
Yeah.
In concept, quite heavy morality, like moral questions.
I think the problem is the themes in it and what Paul's done and the people involved in Paul's wrongdoing.
Yeah.
I'm not sure you could film it. It was just the darkest film you've ever seen. It's horrible.
Mm.
Not at all pleasant. But for all that, a great read.
And yeah, I'm going to have to borrow that.
Questions all sorts of things about how we look at morality. You could say, to dress it up as that, and you'd be right.
Your pick for the year, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess that leaves you, and then we'll say what John's was.
Yes. It's probably for people who listen to the podcast regularly, they probably know that I always end up, rather than writing notes or anything, I always end up just bringing loads of comics with me to every single podcast. And I've done that this time because I find it very difficult to choose my best of anything ever, because there are different things I like for different reasons. So I've brought in loads of comics, but I'm not going to be talking loads about all of them.
Thank God for that.
It's just to remind me what actually happened this year. Now, where should I start? Oh yeah, I should probably talk about the mainstream books anyway.
I think so.
This was a really good year for me at Marvel. Probably the best. I mean, it's quite unusual for me as well, because I've read comics my entire life, and I used to, as we've discussed before, I used to work in a shop. Used to read an awful lot of comics up until a few years ago, and it's only recently that I've started. I had a big gap, and it's only recently I've started picking up individual comics again. So I normally don't read stuff until it's out in trade, ages after it's come out. But I've been picking up single issues again recently, and I have been reading a lot of Marvel stuff, because basically this year's been a really good year for high concept ideas at Marvel. Pulled off really, really well.
Sure.
We've talked a lot about the way they've been handling events really well. Yeah. So we don't need to talk too much about that. Although the Siege, the Cabal, was a really good single issue from this year. We talked about it a few weeks back. Yeah. It couldn't be my pick of the year because it's so closely tied into a lot of other stuff that's going on. You couldn't just pick it up and read it.
No.
It's the year that Kieran Gillen got given the sword, which I've talked about before to talk about, which is to write, which is sort of high concept, spacey hijinks. Mm-hmm. And that's quite interesting. It's also the year that Rick Remender chopped up the Punisher and brought him back as a Frankenstein's monster. And I've only read one issue of that so far, so I can't really comment on how good it's going to be overall, but it was a very, very good first issue.
I wasn't sure about the first Frankencastle. Mm. The second I loved, so...
Tony Moore's art on it is brilliant as well. It's fantastic. So Rick Remender's done a really good job with that. I'm going to be talking about Rick Remender a bit again later on. And again, I've never really cared that much about Iron Man, although I did really enjoy the film.
Yes.
And... Tony Stark's been quite central to everything that's been happening. So mm-hmm. I'd have to say that one of the best, most emotional runs of superhero comic that I've seen in a really long time mm-hmm. was the recent story in Invincible Iron Man. I have talked about it a bit. Sure. With Matt Fraction writing about basically Tony Stark realises that Norman Osborn is after the information, and he's got a database in his brain of all of the Marvel superhero secret identities and stuff. So Tony Stark goes on a mission to basically erase his own mind. And it's just a really, really, for someone who's never really been that into Iron Man, it was just a really interesting and quite downbeat and depressing, a really, really good story, and of course with lots of a look at all of the old Iron Man armours and stuff like that, so that's good. But again, it can't really exist outside of the Marvel Universe. It's not something that you could pick up as your... You could pick it up as your first Iron Man story if what you were looking for was an example of how interesting and unusual the stories that are told
sure.
could be. But like the Frankencastle thing, it's not the quintessential Punisher story, and this is not the quintessential Iron Man story. You'd struggle to really understand what Iron Man was all about from reading this. It helps if you've got a bit of an investment in what the character's past is. But it has been a really good year for me from Marvel. I'm not up to date with Daredevil yet. Spider-Woman, I think, is going to turn out being one of my favourite runs on a mainstream title. And it's not particularly mainstream, considering where it's situated in the Marvel Universe.
See, it's interesting. Sorry, just to railroad you a little bit. None of us, out of the five of us, have picked Daredevil as a highlight of the year, given that the Brubaker run ended.
Mm-hmm.
He joined the Hand, and now Andy Diggle's writing.
Mm. Oh, it's for great. It. Yeah.
And it is very, very good, but I think it's interesting none of us have pulled it out as our pick. I have to say, just to talk about it very, very briefly, I'm sure we'll talk about Daredevil at great length in a future mm-hmm. issue. I found the end of the Brubaker run a little bit hit and miss.
All right.
And I think for me that's made it I don't know, I think that final impact of his last issue was a little bit lost for me, just because of the up and down nature of the series prior to that.
I think I'm still midway through Daredevil, the Brubaker run of Daredevil. Okay. I'm not... I started finding the numbering. I pick it up in trades,
uh-huh.
And the numbering of the trades started confusing me a little bit because I pick them up from Amazon. So it's sort of, so I'm not entirely sure. But if I had to pick my favourite comic of the last 10 years,
uh-huh.
Daredevil would be one of those, because the accumulated run of what Brian Michael Bendis did with it, and what Brubaker did with it, and what it looks like Andy Diggle's doing with it, coupled with the amazing art that's been on it almost throughout, would place it quite high up there. Part of the problem with picking a favourite comic of the year when there's so many ongoing stories, though, is it's quite difficult, because everything takes part as part of something else.
Yes.
So picking out an individual run, it's not like Batman Year One or something, where you could say that's a great individual story. Everything counts on something that's happened before, and there aren't that many self-contained stories.
That's fair enough.
In the mainstream comics. So I think that's probably why. I mean, Daredevil's my favourite comic character. He's my favourite he's certainly my favourite superhero, but it's just, you know, I could pick out my favourite Daredevil stories, but it'd be difficult to pick what's going on in any given year as the main
thing. It's funny, because ongoing, I prefer what Brubaker's done with Captain America rather than
with
Daredevil. I prefer the, if you're talking about, you know, along from the death of Steve Rogers up to now, I've really enjoyed, I think, more so than what he's done with Daredevil.
Mm. I haven't read it, so I can't comment. I do like Brubaker a lot, though. Sure. And I mean, Incognito isn't in this.
No, that deserves an honourable mention, though.
Because I haven't, I still want to pick up the trade. Yeah. The first issue was great, but I haven't read the rest of it. But yeah, so Marvel, that was a good year. DC, I haven't been picking up that much of the main DC stuff, but as far as awesome comic work that's going on, Greg Rucker and J.H. Williams on Batwoman, on Detective Comics with Batwoman in, is just, and I won't mention the backup that much, that is very good as well.
The question's excellent.
Yeah, but it's just been incredible comic storytelling. The art's brilliant and the writing's brilliant and stuff. Again, if you're not already a bit invested in Detective Comics, it might be difficult to pick up. J.H. Williams is quite a demanding artist if you don't read that many comics. And I mean, I'm talking from the point of view of knowing lots of people who don't read comics because they think that there's a trick to reading the layouts of the pages and stuff. J.H. Williams does some incredible things with layout. We've talked about this book a lot in the past, so I don't want to talk too much about it, but it's certainly my favourite book from DC, from the DC mainstream. I think, though, that... this is another sketchy one, because I think most of the comics might have come out... in the previous year, but the Northlanders, the second Northlanders graphic novel, was a very satisfying read. Main reason I'm mentioning Northlanders is because I am going to be mentioning Viking in a minute. And I think Northlanders slightly has the edge, but if you're talking about Viking books... kind of feel like you need to mention both.
Which is odd, because in terms of stories, they are dissimilar.
Yeah, completely. It's something we've mentioned before. When you were talking about Back to Brooklyn, it made me think a little bit of this second book of Northlanders, because Brian Wood is just a brilliant writer. We've talked about how he doesn't get held up as much as he should, really, as a great example of a writer, but it's kind of because he goes off and does his own thing more than anything else.
Because DMZ is consistently very, very good indeed.
And the illustration in this book, it's Northlanders is basically his stories about Vikings. And each book he does has a different artist, I think. This one's illustrated by Ryan Kelly. And it's the story of it's in Ireland in AD 1014. And it's basically about this guy called Magnus, who is fighting off the Vikings, who've occupied Ireland. He's fighting them off. He's basically doing these, like, I suppose, there's a little bit of a parallel drawn between him essentially being a terrorist. He's terrorising the Vikings and killing off bunches of them. And he's doing it with his daughter in tow. He's not doing it with his daughter. That would be a completely different story. But he's like...
That's more like Band of Brooklyn.
Yeah, she's... It's kind of a lone wolf and cub style thing, where he's got his daughter in tow and he's sort of protecting her while at the same time she's involved in what he's doing and stuff. And there's a guy called Lord Ragnar Ragnarsson, who works with the king of the Vikings or whatever, and it says he's a forensic specialist. Obviously, the way he's trying to track Magnus.
Sure.
The way he's trying to track him is quite unusual for the time, because he's looking at evidence and stuff. Yeah. He's not just torturing people until they tell him what he needs to know and stuff. And so there's this kind of cat and mouse thing going on between the two of them, but like Back to Brooklyn, nobody comes out of this story particularly clean by the end of it. It's an interesting story up to the end, at which point it just kicks you in the gut really, really badly. And it's I don't think it's giving away too much to say that. But as far as emotional impact for this year, this book, the Northlander's Book 2, The Cross and the Hammer, surprised me by the effect it had on me by the end.
Sure.
Especially because I enjoy reading Northlanders, but it's kind of peculiar. He's not running characters through the whole thing, so each book seems to have a new character, and you're having to form a relationship with them at the beginning. You don't expect to have an emotional investment, and you don't expect to have as much of an emotional investment as you end up having.
I think the thing, Northlanders just feels authentic, though, doesn't it?
Mm.
It really feels of the period in which it's set, which is consistently good. It's
Yeah, definitely. That does lead me on to Viking, though.
Uh-huh.
Now, we've said it gets compared to Northlanders,
yeah,
unfairly, because they're both about Vikings, mainly because Northlanders feels quite authentic and everything's, the action in it is quite quiet,
yeah,
for the most part, and it's about how the characters, yeah, interact with each other. Viking, although I think it's on its fourth or fifth issue now, I'm not sure.
Fourth.
It's by Ivan Brandon, who we've talked about as being one of those really good writers that's, yeah, been coming through in the last year. And drawn by Nick Klein, fully painted by Nick Klein, who I've never seen his art before, and it's just a revelation. It's
beautiful,
gorgeous.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But I think it's turning out to be a heist movie, but set,
yeah,
during Viking,
yeah,
times. So it's sort of, it's not silly by any means, and there's some quite upsetting stuff happens in the first couple of issues. Some characters have bad things happen to them that you wouldn't wish on, uh-huh, them. But it's, ultimately, it's all about the plot.
Yeah.
There's a theft. I think they're planning a heist, basically. Part of the problem with it being, it's an image book, and part of the problem with that means that I think they're having to get it done alongside other projects,
yeah,
that they're doing, so it doesn't come out as quickly as I'd hoped.
It's quite interesting as well. I think it's the first issue you've got there. There is a, what essentially reads like a disclaimer where, is it Ivan Brandon, did he say, the writer,
yeah,
tells us that he came up with the idea a very long time ago. I think conscious of the fact that many comparisons are going to be drawn,
yeah, yeah,
between that book and Northlander, so he's obviously aware of it as well. But it's, you know, they're both very good books in their own right, but they're very different, aren't they?
Mm. It's particularly peculiar for me as well, because it's kind of, the way it's drawn is kind of how I'd always kind of hoped Simon Bisley, who did Slain, the Old,
yeah,
God and a bunch of other stuff, would end up looking. What's actually, it's a very, like that first, mm-hmm, book he did, it's a very nice, sumptuous mix of fully painted artwork and line drawings and stuff like,
yeah,
that. It's a really nice mix of different ways of telling, uh-huh, a story. But where Simon Bisley has kind of devolved into quite a caricaturish version of his art most of the time, this is just kind of really nice character play, really nice work on facial expressions. Doesn't flinch from gore, and it's one of my favourite things coming from Image this year. And it's worth mentioning, because I don't know if it's going to get mentioned an awful lot, but it is an impressive and unusually formatted book.
It's getting better. I was a little bit concerned after issue two, but three and four have been better.
The second issue lost me a little bit, but
yeah,
three and four were very, very good. Another book that I don't really know if that can't make it as my book of the year was Four Eyes from Image, mainly because the first issue came out 2008, I think.
Okay.
The second issue came out 2009, and there hasn't been a third issue yet. Again, it's written by Joe Kelly and drawn by Max Fumara, I think his name is. And again, because it's an Image book, it's kind of having to fit in with the other work that they're,
yeah,
both doing, which is why it's taking ages to come out. Yeah. But it's a very peculiar book. It's about, I think it's set during the Great Depression. It's been a while since I read it. Yeah, New York, 1934.
Uh-huh.
So it's set during the Great Depression, and there's lots of really atmospheric scene setting going on. Except that it's set in a world where dragons really exist.
Oh, excellent.
And basically the way some organised criminals are dealing with the Great Depression is they are running these illegal dragon fighting, like dragon arenas.
Of course they are.
So the dragons are being captured yeah. and trained to fight each other, and of course it's bread and circuses, people flood in.
Why don't they just
to bet on it? And
why don't they take their pile of gold that they lie on?
That's not really a part of this particular universe. But the story revolves around a little boy whose dad works for these criminals. When he's very small, he sees his dad. His dad works as a dragon catcher or a dragon wrangler.
Okay.
And he sees his father. He's out for a day at the beach with his mum and his dad. And he follows his dad off. His dad goes off to do some business, and he follows his dad off and sees his father killed by a dragon. And so he hates dragons. And he ends up kind of inserting himself in the seedy world of the dragon fighting ring. There's only been two issues so far, so it's very difficult to say how it's going to pan out.
Sure.
But these are really good first two issues. The art is lovely. It kind of reminds me of Tim Sale at his best. And it's just a really atmospheric and peculiar read. It's not the sort of story you expect to read in comics necessarily.
No, it's not. It's taking two different sort of genres,
yeah.
isn't it?
And mixing crashing them together, yeah.
And it's...
And it is very, like I said, it's very atmospheric. You kind of... Joe Kelly's clearly got a kind of an affinity with the era. Even though they've got dragons in there, it isn't like everything's fantasy. The dragons are the only real fantasy element to it. So those are two really good Image books that are coming out. Very, very slowly. I should talk very briefly about Radical Comics as well, because they're my favourite new comic book company. I've mentioned Hotwire in passing a couple of times, but I don't think I've ever really gone into detail about it. It's a kind of a sort of science fiction horror comic that rather cheekily credits Warren Ellis on the cover, even though it's mostly based on ideas that he came up with the artist-writer Steve Pugh. Steve Pugh is a British artist who started on 2008 years and years and years ago. And he's never really been on particularly high-profile books. He did Animal Man for a while, and a really good run on Animal Man for a while and stuff. But he's written, and basically he knows Warren Ellis, and they came up with the idea. Sorry, I'm just opening my comic deck.
That's okay.
They obviously came up with the idea together. Warren Ellis has talked about it on his website, which is why he gets credited on the front cover. But the peculiar thing for me was that it's a story about it's set in a peculiar future. Quite a dystopic future, but the action centres around this woman who works for the police as a kind of an exorcist called Hotwire.
Okay.
There was a ping. What was that?
Nothing.
It
wasn't me texting someone.
And it's basically there are these ghostly intrusions into our reality,
yeah.
while at the same time there's all of this there's an unhappy mob of people. It's pretty much a police state by this point, and it's just there's an awful lot of different stuff thrown into it. It feels like a Warren Ellis book. There's lots of elements in it that sound like Warren Ellis elements, but I have to be honest, I think that Steve Pugh has done a better job of telling a Warren Ellis-style story than I've seen in a lot of the recent stuff that Warren Ellis has done.
Do you mean it's like Warren Ellis, only not so angry?
No, I think it's... Because I quite like angry Warren Ellis.
Oh, good, yeah.
It's kind of... Warren Ellis has recently been... A lot of his work's been about the ideas.
Sure.
I think I've mentioned this before when we've talked about Transmetropolitan. His stuff's very... he's very concerned at the moment with making comics out of really cool ideas or concepts or whatever. And that's obviously appealing to an awful lot of people. But my favourite stuff by him is the stuff where I can buy the characters, the way they're interacting with each other. Actually, he did his novel, Crooked Little Vane, did quite a good job of this. And his online comic, which eludes me at the moment, I can't remember what it's called, is really, really good. I actually can't remember what it's called. That's dreadful. It'll come to me in a minute.
It's really annoying.
It's brilliant. It's kind of like a steampunky thing set in an alternate London. Is really, really good. But the stuff he's been bringing out, the one-shots and stuff he's been bringing out, have all been really good ideas where I haven't really cared that much about the characters, even though I've seen how clever he's being. Yeah. Whereas Hotwire is... I think Radical Comics' remit is kind of they're deliberately bringing books out that might have a decent future in other media like films and stuff like that. And it is just it's this great high concept science horror adventure, and it's just really, really good. You should have a look at that while I'm talking about the other book. Radical Comics, we talked about them recently because they are the guys who brought out The Last Days of American Crime by Rick Remender and Greg Tacchini.
I was correct when I suggested that Richard will have almost definitely bought that because he did like it very much.
He did, yeah. The book I keep coming back to when I think about books that have really blown me away this year, The Last Days of American Crime, really, really did surprise me because I kind of picked it up on a whim and I loved it. It's another Radical Comics book, and were it a couple of issues in, had it all come out this year, and if it's consistently as good as this first issue is, it's probably going to be quite high on my list for next year. So I just think Radical Comics, I know they're bringing out a lot of other stuff, most of which I'm probably not going to be that interested in, but those two books just really, really surprised me and impressed me. Favourite British comic of the year, again, I think most of it came out early this year, is Harker by self-published but in American comic format. It's Harker by Roger Gibson and Vince Danks. It's this beautifully drawn black and white book that kind of is about these two investigators who've come in to investigate what looks like a ritual killing in London. There's a body found on the steps of a church, and it's the easiest way to describe it. I'm conscious that I've been talking for a really long time. The easiest way to describe it is it's kind of a bit like Inspector Morse, in that it's quite a cosy sort of murder mystery. The characters are will be quite familiar to anyone who's watched much like British murder mystery TV, but it's fun. You should have a look at that as well. You can buy that online. It's coming out... Notionally, it was going to be coming out monthly. I've still got to pick up more than the first three issues, but the first three issues were great. The artwork is... I don't know if he uses photo reference or not. I did talk to them a bit at Bristol last year, actually.
I was just about to say, they've been doing the UK convention circuit very heavily, haven't they?
It doesn't look like... In some panels, it looks like he's using photo reference because the character work is just... gorgeous, and the locations look exactly like the places they're supposed to be. They're places around London, but at the same time there's a lot more life to what's going on in the pictures than you normally get with heavily photo referenced artwork.
I was going to say, it
doesn't look like photo reference, basically.
You suspect, as you look around the other panels, you suspect some of those larger pages are. Mm. But you're right, he breathes life into it. It can be... That's definitely a photo. I'm pointing to a panel that is clearly a photo reference. But yeah, you're quite right.
It reminds me a lot of... one of my favourite British artists is a guy called Arthur Ranson, who used to do a lot of work in Lookin, and in the Lookin comic, which was all TV stuff. And has done
the ITV TV stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah. And did some seminal Judge Anderson stories for 2000 AD, and also The Button Man for 2000 AD. Uh-huh. Vince Dank's art reminds me an awful lot of his style, and I just think it's lovely. And I need to pick up the rest, basically. But I've kind of been hanging on so that I can buy it from them in person at the
Comic Bristol will be good.
I also picked up my favourite. I bought loads of mini comics at Bristol last year. The real standouts for me were one book called Urban Beasts, which is written by Daniel Hartwell and Anna Rubens, and drawn by Karen Rubens. It's a very peculiar story set in England, in quite a familiar version of England, except all of the characters kind of have animal totems in, and there are two particular characters, one who's kind of a bit of a magician, a bit of a, is quite confident with the power to see what's going on, and another character who's just suddenly started seeing, like, his friend looking like an insect and stuff like that, and is going a bit nuts. I don't know if further issues of this have come out. It's from itchpublishing.com, and I need to go looking for that, but that was a lovely little book. And all of the small press stuff I'm talking about, I actually wrote about on my website, nicksite.com, which I'm sure we can furnish the listener with a link to from...
If they go to... absolutely, we can do, and there's also a link to your both of your sites on the main Modern Comics site.
If you get the chance, either from the internet or next time you're at a convention, you should pick up a book called The Sea, which is written and drawn by a guy called Will Kirkby, and is very peculiar and lovely. It's kind of done almost in comic strip format, three panel lengthways stories. The first issue is about a guy who's shipwrecked and starts to see things while he's floating on the sea, and the story kind of unravels where it turns out he has a bit of a past. And then the second story follows a Japanese... what were they called? The fighter pilots, the kamikaze pilots, who lands on an island... who crash lands on an island and starts seeing creatures and monsters and stuff and peculiar stuff going on. And the third story...
Like a shit kamikaze pilot.
Yeah, it didn't really work out for him.
Not crash into an enemy vehicle, but he also survived. What a prick.
And the third story follows another character, I think, who's found their way onto an island. But it basically, over the course of the story, starts to transpire that over the course of the comics, it starts to transpire that all these three people have landed on the same island. And there's the same mythology running through it, even though it's not told as a single narrative running through. And his art style is really, really interesting. It's called The Sea, and you can find Will Kirkby at Chamonkey, chamonkee.livejournal.com. It was one of my favourite things that I picked up at Bristol last year, because it's a really unusual story. It's not something you all have seen before. And the other thing I have to pick up on, but again, there's only been one issue so far, so it's difficult to know where it's going to go, was Stumptown by Greg Rucker and Matthew Southworth and Lee Luffridge. It's the long-awaited Stumptown, I believe, from Oni Press. And it's just a lovely noir sort of detective comic.
Yeah.
I did talk about it a few weeks back, so I won't go into too much detail about it. That hasn't stopped me the rest of the time. But if I had to pick an individual comic...
You do have to pick an individual comic or series or... something tangible we can vote on.
Oh, fuck. Stumptown, I suppose. I'm willing to go out on a limb, because I love Greg Rucker and he hasn't let me down yet. So I think that's going to turn out to be one of my favourite comics. I just love that first issue. It's understated, but it's just really interesting. And, you know, he can only ruin it from here on in.
Well, that's one way to look at it. Well, thank you. That was a very...
comprehensive, last year.
That's every book that came out last year.
So every single book that we've talked about.
No, that's good. So, essentially, from Richard, we've had Chew. From Jane, we've had Why the Last Man. From you, we've had Stumptown Nick. And from me, back to Brooklyn, John, if he was here, would have suggested Unknown Soldier.
Yes, he would have, because he loved that book.
Excuse me. Written by Joshua Desart with art by Alberto Ponchinelli, tells a story of, I can't remember the main protagonist's name, because up until 2 hours ago I thought John was going to join us to talk about it. he's a doctor, isn't he? He goes to, is it Uganda?
Yeah.
To help with a relief effort there. Gets drawn into the civil conflict.
In a story ripped from the headlines.
Absolutely. It is very topical. I think the story is dealt with a great deal of sensitivity.
I think it's a brilliant, brilliant comic. It's quite heart-wrenching. You feel for the main character. There's a sense that there's going to be intrigue in later books.
Yeah.
I haven't read later books, so I think I'm the only one out of...
I've only read the first trade.
Oh, right, okay. So, I don't know if you've read that yet.
I haven't read anything. So
it really is very, very good.
It is.
It's violent, and but none of it's... It's not sensational at all.
It isn't, and I think it's very, because it is very topical, as you say, ripped from the headlines. It could have just been sick, frankly, couldn't it? But it's dealt with real care, real light, deft touch. It's compelling reading.
Mm.
I think we actually voted, didn't we, before we...
I think, yeah.
Before we met up, and I know Richard agrees with this, that actually, if... we have to make a decision on a single book this year as a group that we think really is the standout book of the year, then really I think our nod goes to Unknown Soldier.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's intriguing that the reason... excuse me. The reason you were so cautious in the way you put that is that we haven't talked about it at all today, but definitely it's the one that the most of us...
We haven't, and that's John's fault.
Yeah. That we felt. I think it's the one that we all felt was the most... yeah, it's the one we can all agree on the most, absolutely, basically, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's a heart-wrenching comic. Yeah. It's actually quite quite painful read, but in a good way.
It is in a good way. It makes you think, you know. It's another one that sort of questions morality, doesn't it? You know, your morality in any given situation. It's a vital book, I think. So it's well worth... So, essentially, the Monkey on My Back podcast, Mum Comics...
Book of the Year.
So congratulations.
Well done, John, for not being here and yet being the only one who picked the winner.
Thanks, John, you prick, for not being here to talk about it. He's not really a prick. He's a very nice guy, and he couldn't avoid not being here, but yes.
It's very bittersweet. I feel quite bittersweet about the fact that we all obviously agreed on that book, but it wasn't any of our choices.
Yeah, we have spotlighted it, though. If you want to hear a comprehensive conversation about Unknown Soldier and the revelation of the winner of the Unknown Soldier competition...
I think I got that spare book, didn't I, Neil?
Podcast? No, it's definitely still on my shelf.
All right, okay.
Episode number one, we spoke about it. We liked it so much, it was our first
ever spotlight. Focus.
Yeah. Excellent. Okay, well, that was the year that was.
That was. What do we think is going to happen in the next year?
This year, 2010, I think that finally the mysteries of the monolith will be revealed to us.
My favourite mysteries.
Yeah, which is really exciting. That's
my favourite mystery.
I'm going to get myself up to Europa and fuck the monolith. I'm having Europa.
You're going to fuck the monolith.
I'm going to fuck the monolith right in its... side.
You're basically going to dry hump the monolith, I think.
I am going to dry hump the monolith. Yeah, hit it with a bone.
That was my favourite of the 2001, the two 2000 movies.
Really?
I liked 2010. I liked John Lithgow in 2010.
That is a good film.
He's stuck in my head.
Yeah.
Is Iron Man 2 out this year?
Yep.
Is there another Marvel film coming out this year?
Is Thor out?
Maybe.
I'm not sure.
I don't know when that's out.
Just that's the problem, isn't it, now? Things just take such a long time for
the
CGI
out
to be done. Kick-Ass.
Losers is looking good. I read the first Losers book the other day. I borrowed it from James, and it's very, very cool. Kick-Ass should
Kick-Ass.
Be interesting.
Yeah, that's out.
There's another film called Super, I think, that's looking quite interesting, that's about a normal person becoming a superhero, but sounds a bit darker than Kick-Ass.
The Greatest American Hero.
Is there going to be a...
I don't know, it's just always worth...
That'd be brilliant, wouldn't it?
It's just always worth looking at. Great series, underrated.
But Richard has done a piece for the website.
He has done a piece, yeah. We're floundering in our ignorance with Richard. Richard's done a piece about movie rumours and about forthcoming movies for 2010 on the website.
Did you know there was a Greatest American Hero comic out in last year?
I think that featured with the
original
American man,
with the original William Cat was involved in it somehow. Oh, fantastic.
And the whole time you're reading it, do you have to sing in your head, believe it or not?
Maybe. Was that where that song came from?
Yeah. That's, do you know, you heard me play it earlier, maybe.
Did you play it earlier?
Yeah, I have a MP3 of it on my
computer.
Yeah, which, let's face it, we're going to be sharing with people in a minute now, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we have to. Yeah, you saw that look on my face.
Yeah.
I think, as far as predictions for me for the new year, I think I'm going to spend most of it working out how to use Windows 7, which is the first time I've bought myself a proper version of Windows that's on my computer, because previously my computers have had legacy versions of it on there. So I'm very excited. That's going to be my year. Oh, good. I managed to make my Xbox and my Windows PC talk to each other, which was very exciting.
You've got a little bit of an Xbox crush going on, haven't you?
I really love my Xbox. I'm still playing the same games I was playing. We discussed this the other day, Amy and I. We are basically like the kid that got given the best toy of the year and is spending all of their time playing the box, because we've got this powerhouse of a console in the house, and we play Peggle all the time on it, which is basically a game you could have played on your Nintendo DS. In fact, people do play it on their iPhones quite a lot.
It's fun though, isn't it? You can play online, hot. I'm sure.
Hmm? Yeah, you can. I still don't know who you are online.
I'm not going to tell you on the podcast.
No, don't. That'd be silly.
Yeah.
The rest of my year is going to be playing Xbox and working out Windows 7. Oh, and getting married.
I was going to say, aren't you getting married this year?
That might happen.
Wouldn't that be the highlight of the year?
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And
yes.
Really?
Moving.
More of a highlight than a Bristol Comic Con.
I might not be able to go to the Bristol Comic Con. I think our honeymoon's going to be swamping it. And that was a specific condition. See, this is where the compromises start. Relationships. They're just one sickening compromise after another, aren't they?
First she took away my Comic Con and I did not say anything. What would be next?
We have to do a trip to Thought Bubble. Is it Thought Bubble?
Yeah, I'd like to go to Thought Bubble. I'm probably not going to do Bix this year, but I would like to make my way out to Thought Bubble. That looked like a really good show.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's fun taking the train all the way up to Leeds. It doesn't take forever.
Do we know the numbers of any hookers up in Leeds? We're going to be in a hotel.
I'm not sure if they have that position in rugby league, which is the most popular game. I think that's very much a union position.
It's going to be like Vegas. It's like we're going to Vegas.
It will be like
Vegas. It's like
Vegas.
Vegas.
Vegas, baby. What happens at Leeds stays in Leeds.
One thing I'd quite like to do is actually save up some money and maybe do the New York Comic Con early next year.
One thing I want to do, actually, before we remind me, but I would like to talk about comic convention episodes in TV programmes, because they're a pet peeve of mine.
Oh, yeah.
They're always quite fun and stupid. And
when the UK convention season rolls around, which consists of, what, three?
Yeah.
Essentially, three decent-sized comic conventions. We'll probably mention that when you don't come to Bristol with us. I'm crying inside now. Yeah. That might just be my cold. So, thank you to everyone who's persevered with us over the last year.
Yay! It's only been the last few months. They're going to have to put up with us for the whole year next year.
That's true. Also, everyone who's visited our site, because our site is almost exactly a year old now.
Yay! Happy birthday to monkeyonmybackcomics.com.
Thank you very much. So, I hope we all have a good 2010.
Yeah.
God bless us, everyone.
God bless us, everyone. And apologies to anyone who's had to put up my snuffling all the way through.
Snuffling, sneezing, that weird noise you keep making.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I loved it.
I'll dose myself up for the podcast on Thursday. Until then, goodbye and Happy New Year.
Sayonara.
Bye.
Au revoir.
Was that a bit racist?
Yes, very racist indeed.